Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know that saying, too good to be true? Well, today we're looking at a story that really puts that to the test.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We're diving into the world of golf, contracts, and what happens when a hole-in-one celebration turns into, well, a legal battle over a brand new Subaru.
That's a story I gotta hear.
It is, it is. And it all hinges on implied contracts. You know, those agreements that aren't actually written down, but they're formed based on like actions and what both sides expect.
Tricky stuff.
Very tricky. So to set the scene, we're going back to June 2015. Our main character is Brett Waymond, a professional golfer who's playing in a charity tournament.
Okay.
Sponsored by, you guessed it, Nate Wade Subaru.
Of course.
They've got this shiny new Subaru parked next to the 8-hole and the big sign advertising, you know, hole-in-one contest. Everyone's excited. There's a buzz in the air.
Gotcha, gotcha.
But here's the thing. Neither the official rules nor the sign actually said that the Subaru would be awarded for a hole-in-one. It's just kind of imply, right?
Ah, that's where it gets interesting.
Right. Like, you see the car, you see the sign, you kind of just assume...
Oh, for sure.
...that the lucky golfer who sinks it is driving home in style.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Waymond thought when he nailed that shot. Right.
Right.
He's ecstatic, the crowd is cheering, but then...
Uh-oh. There's always a but then.
There is. This is where it gets a little, well, awkward.
Oh.
The club pro, you know, knowing that Wayman's a pro, says, good luck getting that car, Brett.
Whoa. Talk about a mood killer.
Right. Not exactly the congratulations you'd expect.
Not at all.
So, turns out Nate Wade refused to hand over the keys, claiming that, oh, professional golfers were excluded from the contest.
Oh, so they pull that card after he gets the hole in one.
Exactly. But, again, this wasn't stated anywhere explicitly.
Hmm. Sounds a bit fishy to me.
Yeah. So is Nate Wade, you know, kind of pulling a bait and switch. To figure that out, we need to dive into this legal concept of an implied in fact contract.
Okay, let's do it.
So Waymond, feeling pretty cheated, sued Nate Wade for breach of contract.
Makes sense.
Yeah. His argument was that Nate Wade, by setting up this whole contest, the way they did the car, the sign, the whole atmosphere, they created an implied contract that anyone, pro or not, who got a hole-in-one would win.
I see. So it comes down to whether Waymond's assumption that he was eligible was reasonable given all the circumstances.
Exactly. But how do you even determine what's reasonable in a situation like this?
That's where it gets even trickier. Both sides called in expert witnesses, other professional golfers, to talk about the customs and understandings within the golf community.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Basically, they were trying to figure out if there was like an unspoken rule about pros being excluded from prizes.
Like a secret golf code?
Kinda, yeah. But here's where the plot thickens.
Uh-oh.
Waymond's expert says, nope, there's no standard rule in golf that disqualifies pros from winning prizes at these charity tournaments. But Nate Wade's expert, the club pro, who made that ominous comment, says, hold on, there's a general understanding that pros should say something, disclose their pro status if they want the prize.
Okay, so even the experts are disagreeing.
Exactly. That's the thing. There's no clear rule.
So it's not very standardized.
Not at all. And that lack of uniformity is key here. Because if there's no established custom, how can you argue that Waymond should have known or assumed he was ineligible based on some unspoken rule?
That's a good point.
Right. And to make things even more complicated, remember Nate Wade's expert who said there was an understanding about pros?
Yeah.
Well, he later admitted that there's no uniformity among all pros in the golf community.
Oh, so their own expert is kind of undermining them here.
It kind of seems that way. It raises the question. If even the experts can't agree, how could Waymond possibly know?
This just keeps getting more and more interesting. So we've got a missing contract, disputed prize, and conflicting opinions. What happens when this mess goes to court?
Well, despite all the confusion, the district court initially sided with Waymond.
Oh, so he wins.
Well, they gave him what's called a summary judgment.
I think I might need a little explainer on summary judgment.
Sure. Basically, a summary judgment means the judge decides the case without a full trial.
Oh, I see.
They do that when the facts and the law are clearly on one side. In this case, the court said, based on the sign, the car, and the rule sheet, any golfer would reasonably believe they could win.
Okay, so round one goes to Waymond. But is that the end of it?
There might be a but coming.
Oh, no.
The Utah Court of Appeals got involved, and things are about to get more complicated.
So the district court says Waymond wins, But then the Utah Court of Appeals steps in.
Yeah, they weren't so quick to hand over the victory. They basically said, hold on, there are a few things here that need a closer look.
Okay. So they weren't convinced.
Not entirely. They actually thought a jury should be the one to make the call.
A jury? Wow, okay. So what didn't they like about the original ruling?
Well, the big thing was there wasn't this clear written contract, you know, spelling out every single detail of the contest.
Right, right.
So they said just having the car and the sign and that little mention in the rules wasn't enough to say for sure that Nate Wade meant to give a car to any golfer who got a hole in one.
So even though they set things up in a way that anyone could win, it doesn't automatically mean they entered into, like, a legal agreement, a contract, with every golfer there.
Exactly. It's a good example of how intention isn't the same as a legal offer.
So Nate Wade might have wanted to give the car away, but just wanting to isn't a binding obligation.
Right. You need more than just, like, a good feeling to make it a legal contract.
I see. So the appeals court is saying there needs to be a clear offer and acceptance for a contract to actually exist. But how do you even figure that out when nothing was written down?
That's where the idea of objective manifestations comes in.
Objective manifestations.
Yeah. It sounds complicated, but it just means looking at the actions of both sides, not just what they were thinking or intended.
Okay, so not what's in their heads, but what they actually did.
Right. You got to ask, would a reasonable person looking at those actions think there was a contract?
So it's not about what Nate Wade thought. It's about whether their actions, like putting the car out there, putting up that sign, if those actions clearly showed they were making an offer to someone like Waymond.
Exactly. And because there wasn't a written agreement, the court basically said, well, a jury needs to decide if what Nate Wade did was enough to be considered a clear offer.
It's all getting so confusing. So it's like the appeals court is saying it's all down to how you interpret things. Like, did what Nate Wade did create a reasonable expectation for a golfer, pro or not, to believe they had a shot at the car?
Yeah, that's the big question. And remember those conflicting testimonies from the golf experts. That makes things even harder.
Oh, right. Because if even the pros can't agree on what the rules are, how's an average person supposed to?
Exactly. The court basically said, look, this is way too vague. We need a jury to consider everything, the setup, what the experts say, any customs, and then decide if a reasonable person would thought there was a real offer.
So back to square one for Waymond. He thought he was getting a new car, and now it's a whole trial.
It really shows how situations that seem simple can get pretty messy legally.
Definitely. We've gone from a hole-in-one celebration to, like, a deep dive into contracts, customs, and legal interpretations. I bet a lot of people listening are thinking twice about what they thought they knew.
Yeah, it really makes you think.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the bigger picture of this case and what it all means when those unspoken agreements and assumptions, well, when they clash. And we're back. You know, this whole hole-in-one situation really makes you think about how often we rely on, like, unspoken agreements in our lives.
It's true. We do it all the time.
Yeah. It's like if you go to a restaurant, you don't sign a contract before ordering, right? Mm-hmm. You just assume they'll bring you the food and you'll pay the price listed.
Yeah. Right. We're always navigating these implied social contracts. This case just shows how messy things can get when those understandings are challenged, especially in court.
So is this a sign we should be getting everything in writing? Like, should I write up a contract every time I borrow a book from a friend?
Well, while it's smart to have agreements in writing, especially important ones, you don't need to go that far for every little thing. I think the takeaway here is more about being aware of those gray areas where assumptions can cause problems.
Yeah, like what you think is implied might not be so obvious to the other person.
Right.
It's like, let's say you hire a contractor for a bathroom remodel. Even if you don't have this huge detailed contract, your conversations, what they do, it all creates an implied agreement about the work and payment.
That's a great example. But this case really highlights how hard it can be to prove an implied contract exists, even if you felt like you both understood. It comes down to how a reasonable person would see the situation, and that can get pretty murky.
It makes you wonder, would Waymond have done things differently if he knew this whole golf world thing was a bit fuzzy? Maybe he would have, like, checked with the organizers or gotten something about the prize in writing.
Yeah, maybe. And that's a lesson for us all. You can't always predict how other people will understand things, but being upfront about what you expect and putting things in writing when it matters can help avoid those misunderstandings.
It's all about communication.
Yeah.
And not just to protect yourself, but to make sure everyone's on the same page, that expectations match up.
Exactly. This case shows that even in something as seemingly simple as a hole-in-one, things can get complicated with different interpretations.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. From golf courses and Subarus to implied contracts and expert witnesses, even the power of good communication.
It's been great breaking down this case with you.
Big thanks to our legal expert for guiding us through all the legalese. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us for another deep dive.
Until next time, stay curious and remember, what's not said can be just as important as what is.
And as always, keep diving deep.